Dan Soder and Joe List are one-on-one, two funny comedians from New York City, and we'll do that. First, there's Geico.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Have you ever heard that story that Napoleon used the Egyptian Sphinx for target practice and shot its nose off? Or maybe you've heard that a French astrologer named Nostradamus correctly predicted nearly 500 years of human history. Or maybe someone told you that the legendary blues guitarist Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil at a crossroads in Mississippi. These stories are what I like to call historical myths. Great little tales that may or may not have any basis in historical fact. On Our Fake History, we explore these historical myths and try to determine what's fact, what's fiction, and what is such a good story, it simply must be told. If you dig stories about death-obsessed emperors, lost civilizations, desperate sieges, voodoo black magic, and famous historical figures you thought you knew, then Our Fake History might just be your new favorite podcast. Still not sure? Then stick around to the end of the episode today to hear a teaser episode of Our Fake History. If you dig it, then subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From New York City, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Today, Adam sits down one-on-two with Dan Soder and Joe List. And now, the only person who's ever shared a stage with John Popper and has blown harder than John Popper, Adam Carolla.
All right, Dan Soder, Joe List, comedians. Dan, I did the Bonfire.
Yeah,
show, great. Fun, had a great time.
I'm going by DTJ from now on, or DJT. Down yeah. Syndrome Justin Timberlake from now on.
And Joe, I don't think I've met Joe.
No, but, nice to meet you.
A heralded comedian, and it's kind of nice. In New York, I haven't gotten out to New York in a long time. You always hear about the scene and all the comedians that are making the scene and playing the clubs, and I'm just in Glendale, California, doing nothing. So it's nice to be part of the scene.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited. I'm a fan.
Joe, well, thanks. So Joe, you've toured the world, opening for Louis C.K. We got a movie coming out as well that I'd love to talk about. Well, let's talk about that. Sure. 4th of July. So that was co-written and directed and funded by Louis C.K. and select theaters. Obviously, it came about because you impressed him because you opened for him all over the place.
Yeah, we were having regular sex, and then I threw a movie idea out there while I was coming.
Post-coitus? You just rolled over and you went, hey, Lou, can we do a movie?
So we met in like 2015, and I started touring with him. We became pretty good buddies, and then during the pandemic, we'd always talk movies. We're like movie cunts, you know, similarly mm-hmm. annoying about movies. And so we started talking movies, and one day he called me. It's a funny story to me, at least. He called me one day and said, I got a movie idea, and it was a musical about the band Bad Company.
Mm-hmm.
And like a Mamma Mia, but for Bad Company. And
yeah,
like, there'll be a guy with long hair, you know, brushing his hair, and he's singing Feel Like Making Love.
Bad Company was one of the few bands that had the triple crown. They were called Bad Company. They had an album called Bad Company. They had a song called Bad Company.
And a hit. Yeah.
A hit called Bad Company. So they had all three. And I'll think of the next band that had all three, but continue.
Now I want to think of it.
Well, it's definitely, it would be fun if you unearthed a song called Bon Jovi and it just sucked.
It could have been the band Big Country.
Oh, okay. That sounds
Big
right.
Big Country was the band, Big Country was the album, and Big Country was the hit.
Yeah. Boston never did a song called Boston.
No.
Chicago never did a song. I'm just trying to think of all the bands that have named their album after their own name or self-titled.
Yeah.
You should have to do that as a band. You should have to do a song named after your band to be like, why did you call it that?
Hoobastank is a song about when a man loves a woman. And
well, Incubus, isn't Incubus a ghost that rapes women?
Oh, Dan.
I assume all ghosts rape. Why bother dropping
when
in?
When you're in the other realm, there's really no laws.
There's no don't ask, don't tell, you're gone. There's no real jurisdiction.
That's the big benefit of being a ghost.
Yeah, they go, dude, the rape is very available.
Yeah, I hate to tell you folks, but your grandfather's out there raping people.
Well, don't use a Ouija board because you're going to find out your family's raping.
And if you think about it, they show up in the bedroom at night. When it's raining, that is rape.
And it's a very
time.
It's a very rapist move to just shut a cabinet aggressively and get them to look over and be like, I'm going to fuck you now.
But there, no one ever said, I spotted a ghost in the breakfast nook around 11 a.m. Like, it's always in the bedroom. It's always at night.
Yeah, like 2 p.m. down by the mower. I think I saw my old uncle.
No, they're in the bedroom. They're raping.
Yeah.
And if they're not, they're leaving money on the table.
That's like Ghostbusters could have been a much darker movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just about ghosts raping.
There was the ghost rape movie with Barbara Hershey, I think. And someone's going to have to look it up. But that
Hannah and her sisters?
The whole thing was... yeah, Woody got in on that.
No, just imagine there's a ghost.
The effect was that she was like topless and her breast was moving without any hand on it. And I'm always, as a mechanically minded guy, I'm like, did they use compressed air?
It's a bunch of PSI. Just making that tit bounce.
Well, you've seen those astronauts testing and their cheeks are all puffed out and everything. Maybe it was a centrifuge.
And there's just a guy in a bar in fucking, you know, L.A. in Studio City. And he's like, you know, that tit moving was all me.
Yeah, that was me. It was my compressed air. I used an M-Glow 2200. 20-gallon tank. A lot of guys want to go in with 10.
Those are fat tits, though. You got to push them.
Yeah, I'll go with the 10 up to a B cup. Once we step into C, I go to 20-gallon to two-phase, 240.
Honestly, bring in some real knockers. We're have a problem. We're gonna have a real fucking problem.
All right, the movie. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Right. So anyways, he pitched a movie about Bad Company, and I just felt like, I don't know, it doesn't sound doable. It seems difficult.
Can I ask you, Joe and I have been friends for over 15 years, came up through comedy together. You know, he was the one that like put me on in Boston, and we used to sit around drinking and like talking about Louis. Mm-hmm. Put out specials like at the bar. Me, him, and Nate Bargatze would be like, "That joke's good." We didn't like that joke, and we'd like argue about it. And then he became close friends with Louis C.K.
Now I don't talk to them.
Yeah, doesn't even pick up my calls.
That's what exactly the arc of Jimmy Kimmel and Huey Lewis. Jimmy Kimmel used to sit around and listen to Huey Lewis records, and then all of a sudden they're going fly fishing.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's fucking crazy. But the thought of Joe getting pitched a movie, Joe's very good at saying no or that stuff sucks. So it's weird to think of Louis coming with you at an idea and you being like, no.
I was like, well, I wasn't mean, but I was like, I just don't see it. It seems complicated and the money to get the music and a musical. And I said, if you had come to me with like a murder mystery black and white film, and he's like, oh, that's interesting. And we didn't do that, but we had started talking movies, and that's how it started. And then we just kept talking about it, and then eventually we made it.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, it's very sort of autobiographical. It's about it's similar to my life. It's about a guy that's moves to New York. He's a jazz pianist. That was Louis' idea. I wanted to be a porn star in the movie, but he didn't care for it. But but anyway, he lives in New York and gets sober, and his wife wants a kid, but he feels like he's too anxious. So his therapist tells him to confront his parents, which is the story of so many adults these days. And I'm just always fascinated. My wife and I always laugh about the idea. We have the same therapist, and he's always like, confront them, tell them.
Every time in therapy, when you're like, I have a problem. My grandmother's 94 years old.
Yeah.
She's 94. She's on her way out, Adam.
Confront her.
I'm like, no, she calls me my dead father's name all the time.
Yeah.
You can't confront her.
And also, it's never good. It never works.
Well, that's the premise of the film.
Every single kid I ever talked to on Loveline who was given up for adoption and wanted to go find the biological parent, it's either super boring and lackluster are usually just a shit show.
Yeah.
And they never accept it. They never embrace it. They never internalize. They always give you some story about what they went through.
Yeah.
And what they went through is always worse than what you went through because it was a worse time. Like, of course, you didn't have air conditioning. It was 1922, you know? Yeah. We didn't have a smartphone. We used to have rotary. We used to take trolley cars, you know?
I'm supposed to confront a woman that was born in Oklahoma during the Great Depression about how I feel. And she's like, I've shoved that down. I've made it 94 years.
Right. And there's a lot I did the best I could.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, here's what I went through. Always trumps what you went through.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of, here's how my dad treated me. He woke me up every day by taking a Tipperillo cigar and putting it on my forehead, lit, okay? Yeah. I just threw water at you, you know? Like, they do this thing where you're never going to get to that level.
Yeah, it's always water. What you went through is always the watered-down version of what they went through.
Right, and then so the phases are, initially you feel bad. You're like, oh, geez, I didn't know you were molested, Mom. Oh, geez, I didn't know you had to work in a quarry, Dad. Like, I didn't know. And then some point you're going home in your car, and then you get angry. Like, fuck that. I was trying to get this across, and all they did was give me this story about their life. So
the excuses.
Never going to work. But did you try?
So that's essentially the premise. And I go to Maine where my family's vacationing, and they're drunk and crazy and fun. And Nick DiPaolo is in it, and he's amazing. And Bobby Kelly and Tony V. And it's a really great fun cast. Yeah, Dan's sorry. He can it's say great, it's
and,
good.
And when you go see, as you know, you've gone to Friends screenings before. Mm-hmm. There's the 5 minutes before where you're like, come on.
Yeah.
Don't suck.
Yeah. Don't be too good, but don't suck.
I think we're right in that sweet spot.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to feel like shit when I leave. I want to be proud of you, but nah.
You're looking between 63 and 71 on Rotten Tomatoes. If you're down in the 30s or up in the 90s, both are bitter pills for the poor comedians watching.
We're in the 20s currently, but that's critics, but audience is in the 90s.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And the Wall Street Journal called us one of the best films of the year, which is the best newspaper in America, if you ask me.
So this is an interesting question because I have many efforts in films and documentaries and things that are on Rotten Tomatoes. And since things have turned, basically since Trump, anything I do after Trump, it gets panned by the critics or they don't review it at all. That's the other thing they do. So I'm guessing Louis with the critics took a bit of a panning, right? I mean, there needs to be an explanation. There's a modern day explanation when the critics have it in the 20s and the people have it in the 90s.
Yeah, it's, you know, you want it because we saw the movie at the Beacon Theater the opening night, and I was with, we were a bunch of comics. Joe had a bunch of comics come out, and I sat with Sam Morril and we watched it. And after we were like, genuinely moved. Like, that's an incredible movie. We were so proud of Joe. We were so proud of Bobby and everyone in the movie, and it was so fucking good. And then you saw the reviews come in, and you're like, damn, this is all Louis hate.
It is.
It's all, like, you would read the first couple things, and you're like, they don't even get to the movie.
Yeah.
They're just like, he thinks he could come back, this motherfucker. And you're like, it's not even about...
Yeah, right. The first third of all the articles are about Louis, and then a lot of them are like, this is an allegory for him, and you're like, no. I wrote it, it's not.
Is that weird seeing something you wrote be translated like...
Yeah, I guess it's just part of it, and it's funny because and people that hate Louis do that, and people that love Louis, somebody was like, is this an allegory for America's standing in the United States? And I'm like, yeah, Nick DiPaolo is China, and Bobby Kelly's Japan. I'm like, no, it's not. It's just about what it is. But... I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say, hey, we made a perfect film and fuck these guys. They just hate Louis. But I do think a lot of them are unfair. And some of the criticisms, that when they get to the criticisms, I'm like, that's not true at all. It doesn't make any sense. But, you know, but the audience seems to really enjoy it. So,
well, it's interesting because I was kind of wondering about the criticism and the critics in Louis. Because, like, on one hand, if anyone comes out with anything who's even remotely perceived as conservative or right wing, they just trash it every single time. But then I'm like, Louis, he's had a couple faux pas, but he generally is liked in those circles, or he was, right? He was kind of a comedian's comedian, you know, pre all beating off into a plant or whatever.
Or that was a different name.
I think that was Weinstein.
All right. No. Beating off onto a carpet square. Worse. But I used to do carpets. So to me, a guy has the dignity to beat off into a potted plant. I appreciate it. But what I'm saying is he was a darling for a while, right?
Of course. Yeah. He was the darling. I mean, he was on the cover of Rolling Stones and presenting at the Oscars and, you know, whatever. Things go the way they go, I guess. But listen to Dan talk about how good the movie is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a bummer to see your friend make this awesome thing and then just knowing that, like, you know, blog fodder or, like, press. You know how the press is. They just need something to eat. And it's like, this is just a good movie. You're getting in the way of, I don't know.
But interestingly, the New York Times, I think it was the New York Times. I could be wrong because I read all this stuff. The New York Times, like, kind of panned the movie and were like, fuck Louis. And then at the bottom, it's like, C-. And I'm like, that's not bad.
That's a passing C.
I'll take a C-. And they even praised the cast. So, and a bunch of people were like, he cast himself as the therapist. And I was like, well, that was my idea. I thought he'd be a good therapist.
I loved it because I liked seeing Louis play our therapist, Alan.
Yeah.
Well, do you, and we'll talk about therapy in a second. Here's what I tell everyone when they talk about the press or articles or, you know, we're writing an article about the Man Show or whatever it is. I go, you have no idea how much of the shit you read is wrong until they start writing it about you.
Yeah.
So back in the day, before they were writing it about you or your movie or your project or how things went, you just sit down and read an article and go, I guess that's how it happened.
Yeah.
They write one about you, and you're like, no fucking way. They didn't even get close. And now it makes you think, well, now all the articles you're reading about others, how close did they get?
Of course. Yeah, exactly. And that's what's interesting about having friends that something started happening. I got thrown off. when you have friends that are famous or successful, you get inside stories of like, No. Angelica Houston was doing coke on the boat, and you're like, what? Really? I mean, I'm making that up. I don't know anything
about
it.
James Caan didn't freebase the coke out of her asshole. Yeah. It was on her butt cheek, and you're like, oh, I got it.
Danny's been dead for 10 minutes.
I know. I'm sorry. Is it too soon? Is it too soon?
What the fuck, man? That's Sonny Corleone you're talking about.
I don't know. It's also one of the coolest stories of all time. The guy smoked coke out of a playmate's butthole.
Wait, did he really? Yeah. Oh, because my Angelica Houston was just me trying to improvise, and now I feel like people are going to be like, what?
I was just bringing up a new credit for James Caan that people might not know.
I did not hear that story.
Yeah, apparently that was like a thing that he did. Does it hurt more reading movie reviews or stand-up reviews?
Well, the movie reviews, I'm surprisingly not bothered by them because the movie's doing very well and I don't agree with the critiques. Stand-up reviews I've never read. That's so personal.
It hurts.
That's just you. I get plenty of stand-up reviews on Twitter.
The whole thing about not agreeing with the critique is great, but you have to think about the other million people who are reading it who are taking the critique as gospel and not factoring in all the other factors we talk about.
But I do think, doesn't it feel like true film criticism is dead because of, you know, I hate to be like cliche woke culture is bad guy, but it feels like if you make a movie about civil rights, you have to be like, we loved it.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Because nowadays, if you critique a movie about civil rights, it becomes like, hey, you don't want civil rights?
Yeah.
And you're like, what? It. No, I thought the characters sucked. You know?
The dialogue was stale.
So it does feel like, I think a lot of people maybe are worried to be like, this movie's pretty great. Because they're like, you fucking piece of
right.
shit. But again, I'm not saying we made the best movie of all time. Maybe some of the criticism is warranted. But I think a lot of people know that and they see the audience score, or they see the criticism and go, well, this is just about Louis, so I don't trust this. Let me go see for myself. I hope it's the case.
How's the stand-up scene? Is it back 100% in New York?
It's been back for longer than the clubs want to admit.
Really?
When they were having indoor shows. When we got to come inside.
Yes.
Because, you know, L.A., during the summer months, it's hard to do outside shows.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, not that terrible. Started getting bad around here, and we were like, can we please come inside? And
right.
And we were like, don't tell anybody. And you do these shows where they're like, come on in.
Yeah, it's weird. They had a speakeasy version of, like, women's hair, where they, like, go in garages. I love the science behind it.
A Fight Club to get a perm.
Right. Where there's a sterile
beauty parlor down the street, but we're going to do it in this old garage with radon gas.
Yeah. Move the Tacoma. Right. We're about to fucking put in some highlights.
Right. And, and people were just, I mean, it just shows that people aren't going to stop. They're just going to move. It's like prohibition and we get bathtub gin.
Yeah. The funniest, I think the funniest one that happened during the pandemic was the Stand Comedy Club in New York was doing outside shows. And then they were like, we're gonna open the main room. And we all got so excited. And the booker was like, we're going to do inside shows. And we'd been waiting to do inside shows. And then Chappelle was like, I'm going to do those shows. And so then we all had to go back outside. Mm-hmm. And there was just a night where I was just sweating outside bombing. And there's just a line of beautiful people waiting to go see this exclusive Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock show inside. And you're like, this sucks so bad. Just all these Union Square heroin kids staring at you. And you're like, fuck, this is what it is again.
I also remember walking by the line to get in and just getting like heckled, chirped, whatever the word is. Yeah. This bunch of guys being like, look at those sneakers. You look like an uncle, my uncle at a volume. I was like, hey, man, I just did a set. Let me walk by.
Shut up, dude. I'm just trying to work.
It's a bunch of kids just trashing me.
How do you guys reconcile or even sort of think about that? Something that's always kind of vexed me is like, there is the Chappelle's and your Chris Rock's and Louis and guys like that. And you go, oh, these guys are really good. Mm-hmm. But then I see so many comedians where I go, oh, that guy's really good too. But no one's really heard of that guy. Or maybe that guy's playing clubs and these guys are playing, you know, huge venues.
Yeah.
And you go, how much of it is a like sculpting, shaping of the career versus happenstance versus, you know, why is one song a number one hit and you know many songs that are like better or as good but never got the spins and never caught on? Like, you guys think about that, like, comedically? Like, we all know really funny people.
Yeah.
Maybe some of them are in this room. And you think, like, well, how come this guy's playing arenas and that guy's playing? And I know some of it is, like, Netflix. And
I think it comes down, especially these days, there's people that are very good at marketing, and there's people that don't have a gag reflex.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able just to be like, here's everything. Watch me, enjoy me, embrace me. And then there's people, I don't know, I'm more of this kind where I'm kind of like, I'm stupid. Just like, just come and see the show. I hope you like it. You know,
right.
And I'm bad at being like, I'm the best ever. I'm just kind of like, I got two jokes that I really like. You should come see those for that. But it's, I think we're in the age now where people that push themselves, because everyone now is like a little company.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone that, the people that are really good at marketing are very successful right now.
Yeah, like
very successful.
The first time, I remember I was in, I don't know, doing a show in Miami or something. We had to drive to Orlando or somewhere. I don't know where. We had a 2-hour drive, and this is like, this is like 10, 11, 12 years ago. And we were leaving, and they handed a Kevin Hart CD out, like at a new comedy CD or something. And we all made the 2-hour drive, and I was like, we got nothing to do. And we popped it in. I was like, oh, it's not funny. It wasn't funny. And, and I was like, now I'm sure a lot of it was physical and stuff. It didn't really play well in the rental car, but it was just a lot of like, you know, my dad does this and then he goes, woo. You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this guy's not funny. And then everyone in the car went, nah, this guy's not funny. And I was like, the biggest comedian on the planet. Right. Now, the motor is definitely there. Like, you cannot argue with the motor.
Yeah, the guy works probably harder than anybody in business. I think that is true, like with everyone pushing, but there is like a flip side that is good where people can find you now because of podcasts, because, you know, like they see one thing and they're like, I like that guy. And then they can go find stuff of yours, like a band.
And I think Kevin Hart is talented.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, and super motivated. But when I was listening to CD, I wasn't laughing. And I would have been surprised at the time if you told me he's going to blow up to be, you know, one of the biggest comedians on the planet. I don't know. Maybe the biggest working right now? I don't know.
I think he's got to be. I mean,
he's the top
arenas.
Earner, I think. I think he's the top earning comic.
I think he does arenas.
But I remember like hearing Doug Stanhope for the first time, like on a burnt CD.
And me I too.
Yeah. It was, and you put it on and you're like, what is this?
Right.
And it just changed. It's like the opposite of what you felt with Kevin Hart, where you're like,
right,
holy fuck, I've been watching watered down Tonight Show sets and shit. And right. you hear this and you're like, this guy's fucking incredible, and find other albums.
Right.
So it works both ways. But I think mainstream, whatever that is right now, isn't doing well. It's because it's like there's so many rules, and there's so many, like, the old school way of doing stuff of like, do a Conan and then you do a Comedy Central. Like, Comedy Central's gone.
Right.
They don't do stand-up anymore. Netflix, they're not really... at one time, they were like, oh, you want to get a Netflix special? And now people are like, Joe put out an incredible special this year on YouTube that you can just watch for free.
Dan's my hype man.
Yeah. That's why you brought me in.
I didn't bring him in. Going to feel like I actually brought you in now.
Yeah. He brought me in to hype everything up. I'm getting $100 for this podcast from Joe.
We fast forward 20 minutes. Joe had a solid PM earlier today. Here, I took a picture.
Let you guys want to see his penis? He's got a good piece. Pull it out, Joe.
Yeah. So we're at that point where we've been able to kind of create a meritocracy, where we've just sort of, you know, no longer are at the whim of Netflix or HBO or whatever. You can just put your own stuff out, let the cream rise to the top.
I feel like it feels closer to that now, because with YouTube and podcasts and everything and Patreon, it's like it's easier to cut out a way, because in the old days, if you didn't get through a gatekeeper, you were kind of fucked.
Yeah. Right.
But now you can circumvent it. You can do that way. You can get on TV and sell a show, or you can just do a show on YouTube or your own podcast and kick ass. I mean, there's guys that are making millions of dollars that have never been on network television ever.
Yeah.
How does the process work? We'll start with Dan. Like, thinking of a joke, like a concept. Is it like a lot of people say, I write on stage. Some people say I carve out time to write every day. Some people just sort of go about it and, you know, stuff just comes through their transit.
I think you have like a funny thought. I think it's like just kind of like how it always is, where you're just like, oh, that's funny. And then you, like, I'll call Joe and be like, does anyone do a joke about this? That's like the first thing. And then they
interesting.
Go, no. And you're like, you sure? And you'll call like David Tell does that to a lot of comics.
Oh, he does.
He'll just call and be like, anybody doing a bit about this? And it's so always so David Tell that you're like, what?
No, it tells the best. He's like, have you ever heard a bit about a guy with one arm on a unicycle on Halloween night? And you're like,
anybody doing anything about bisexual dolphins? And you're like, I don't think so, Dave. And he's like, you sure? I think Greg Rochelle has a joke about it. You're like, he doesn't. But I think that's always what's made New York scene like very strong, is mm-hmm. that like, people are going to watch you. Comics are watching comics. Like,
right.
L.A., whenever I go, everyone's always out in the lobby, and they're like, oh, the crowd's so great. Right. New York, you'll like see guys in the back of the room, and you're like, fuck, because it's your coworker. It's like when you were a carpenter. If someone was watching you frame a door, you're like, all right, this guy's watching me. I want to do well. I don't want to suck.
Yeah, well, trying to think. Yeah, usually the guy was paying me, so I wouldn't want to suck. But yeah, if you have any carpentry questions, I'm happy to answer them. I'll tell you one thing about carpentry is I didn't know there was going to be this whole crazy renaissance of everyone building a studio somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And I could have really cleaned up in the podcast world when I was a carpenter, because this would have been right in my wheelhouse. Like, I was a Finnish guy, but I could do furniture and stuff. I could have made this desk. I could have hung that door. I could have put that base and case down.
Yeah, you would have been like Marin's guy. And then he's like, he doles you out. You know what I mean? And then it's like, that's like the LA thing where they're like, you got to get this custom Corolla podcast studio.
No, well, it's like that with cameras now. Everybody has their own camera guy. Like, if you are decent at videography now, you can kick ass, because every single comedian has their own guy following around.
Well, Marin reminded me of something that I was thinking about, but I'm interested in getting your take on it, because I'm out here in New York. I've been out here in a couple of years, and I've been just making the rounds, but I've been talking with comedians and doing shows and doing podcasts and all that. It all seems very equitable. Like, everyone's a family. You do his podcast, he does yours, she does his, and it's just this kind of family. And it has a kind of a... It has a kind of utility to it. Like, well, you want that guy to come on your podcast, right? Okay, well, then do his podcast, and then you'll both be on, you know, each other's podcast. And when I started, it was kind of that way, like a million years ago.
Yeah.
You'd go on Joe's podcast or Mark Maron's podcast, and they'd do your podcast and whatever. And then at some point, it started to break up, and it became sort of like, well, you can't do Letterman if you're going to do Leno. If you're going to do, then you're the Leno guy,
yeah,
or the Letterman guy. And then it sort of got kind of parceled off or something. And I always thought it was weird. And I was also thought, fuck these guys. Like, I always invite anyone can come on my podcast at any time. And now I don't get the invite back because now you've got your podcast and now you've established your podcast. And maybe this is the theme of your podcast and I don't fit in or whatever. But then I kind of came out here and now there's this next wave of podcasters and everyone seems pretty magnanimous about sharing guests and hosts and things like that. But I don't know if you guys have a sense of that. And maybe New York is different than L.A.
I don't know. I mean,
I think it's because we're all friends. And so it's like, you know, you won't do someone's podcast not because you have a problem with them, just because they haven't asked. And then all of a sudden they ask and you're like, yeah, I'll do your podcast. And they're like, oh, shit, okay. And sometimes you forget to invite people. So I don't think it's as tribal as maybe as that. But L.A. podcast, I'm never on any of them. So I'm just kind of like, oh, fuck L.A. podcast.
I know. You have like the two worst businessmen on the planet.
We are basically just like curmudgeon, like New York curmudgeons. What we'll just
there,
do them.
There's a physical part to L.A., which is there is a kind of topographical part, which is this guy's on that side of town and this guy's in Santa Monica and that guy's over in the valley. And there's an explanation that's sort of physiological, like a physical one, which is it's so hard to get to this guy's podcast. There's like a little bit of that. But in general, I feel like the sharing in L.A. isn't quite the same as the vibe in New York.
I feel like everyone's on each other's podcast, but now I've done it. There's just fucking too much podcasting now. Colin Quinn always says, he's like, we're living in a time that you can get destroyed for something you said, and every comedian is recording everything they say.
Yeah,
right.
And it does get in the way sometimes where you're like, when am I supposed to create?
Yeah.
Most of my life is talking about if I'd eat cum for $100. It's like three times a week, I'm like, would you have suck a dog off? And you're like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And it's hard, but you know, you want to do, it's a good way to make a living and get your shit out there, so it's tricky.
Because, like we were talking about, there's no more mainstream. Do Conan, do a spot, you know, late night special. Then now you have a fan base. Now it's right. Like you can go on a podcast, do well, and all of a sudden you're like, I sold out in Tacoma,
right?
And you're like, how the hell did that happen? You're like, that guy's got 1 million downloads, and you're like, oh, cool. And then it builds your fan base. So it's this different. You stumble into it sometimes.
But sometimes you're building their fan base on these lower level podcasts. And then they'll say, hey, why don't you come do my podcast and plug your special? And I'm like, but your podcast has 300 listeners. I'm coming to plug your podcast.
What's even crazier is when a podcast that you help out in the beginning becomes massive and then you're having a hard time getting back on. Yes. Are You Garbage? Phenomenal podcast.
I love it.
But I remember during the podcast, when they created it, they're like, hey, can you do this like weird thing? And you're like, oh, this sounds fun. And then you do it. And then 2 years later, it's like the biggest podcast. And you're like,
I did it 2 days ago, I think. No, 100% happened with me because I was the biggest podcast for years.
Yeah.
And so everyone would want to come on and go, like, I'm starting a podcast. And I would say, fine. And then when they went off and then their podcast got big, they stopped inviting me as guests on their podcast.
They're like, oh, we're going to have Obama on.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, you begged me.
You guys. And also, but also in general, I'm not really offended. It's more like, anyone can come on and talk about anything at any time. It bothers me that people have rules, and especially rules. Your rules from when you're starting to rules when you're big shouldn't change. I mean, it is true that you'll get better guests and so on and so forth, but have a little memory of those who were there and sort of magnanimous at the beginning.
I think that's a lot of people now is like they forget who they were. And then now they're just like kind of posturing in the
moment.
Well,
I think a lot of it is just a pure sort of human necessity. Like you go, I need that guy to do, you know, like when I started 1 million years ago, the first podcast I ever did was Bill Simmons.
Yeah.
And Bill Simmons used to need me to be a guest on a show. We were friends, but he needed me. He was like, I don't have a guest. No one knows what a podcast is. You're funny. You know, it's on the way home from work, you know, like do my podcast. And I would do his podcast. Now I don't really do his podcast anymore. We're still friends. He just doesn't need me. Right. And he doesn't wake up going, shit, who am I going to get on my podcast?
Yeah.
And some of it is like, you can call it selfish or self-centered or, oh, he thinks his shit doesn't stink anymore. But a lot of it is just like being hungry versus not being hungry. You know, when you're not hungry and you have someone going, where do you want to eat? You go, yeah. I don't know. Let's walk for a little while. And they go, you don't want to stop at the Arby's? And you go, nah, I think we should keep walking. Yeah. It's like, well, you're not hungry. You're right. Not really being bad.
Yeah,
you're
just
not into it.
When I had no money, I ate Subway 3 times a week. Because mm-hmm. I'd get a foot-long sandwich and split it up.
And you molested those kids.
Yeah,
you
then
did
I
a little
fucked
stint
all those kids. I did my time. I'm out, and I won't touch the shit. But now I'm like, Subway.
Is this still an analogy I can't follow?
I don't know. I'm just hungry. And now we're just talking restaurants.
Do you guys agree with me that Quiznos
and toasting their sandwiches is an allegory.
I thought it was an allegory. I didn't know what we were doing.
When Jared gets out of the joint,
he's going to be jacked.
Shouldn't Quiznos hire him and just go, look, we understand this guy is he's a convicted pedophile. This is how good our sandwiches are.
We toast the pervert off
him. We toast the pervert.
We grill him until he's no longer a pervert. But
the thing that I found, I was having this like bizarre thought about podcasting the other day, and would you guys tell me if it rings true? I was doing sketch comedy at the Acme Theater. I went from the Groundlings to Acme in L.A., blah, blah, blah. And they had the director Acme, you know, and he was a friend of mine. And he would watch me work and do sketches and do improv and do all the stuff that goes along with being in a troupe, you know. And like one day we're just hanging around. I'd been at it for years through the Groundlings and through Acme and everything. And it wasn't just nothing was really happening. And I said to him, what do you see for me? Like, you've been watching me write, you watch me on stage, you watch me perform, improvise. Like, what do you think? You know? And he went, you need a job where you just talk all day. Yeah. And he didn't say radio. The thing that was funny, he didn't say radio and he didn't say stand up. He didn't say sitcom. He just went, he made up a job. I realize now, like, if he meant radio, he would say AM talk. You know, that's you, or FM talk, or drive time, or something. Yeah. He never said radio. He made up a job in his head in, like, 1992. He just went, just talk. But he knew it was, like, magical. Like if you had a roommate who just ripped bong loads and beat off, and you went, you need a job where you just smoke weed and touch yourself. You know? But it's a made-up job, and I had this weird thought. I was just walking around my neighborhood the other day, and I was like, oh, that's what this is.
Yeah.
That job that Mark Sweeney thought of in 1992 for me to do turned out to be my job, even though it never existed, just sitting and talking all day.
Is he still alive? I want to know my future.
Yeah. He touches
He's
your
like,
head.
You need to fuck a guy every morning. I'm like, oh. Okay.
Yeah, you need to do gay sex on film.
Like, you're going to have to wait like 17 years because from the time he told me this is what I should be doing to the time I did my first podcast was probably about 17 years later.
I got time.
He's a slow burn oracle. He really takes his time. But I think about that especially with the Bonfire, because you know, Sirius XM, I worked in radio at like a rock station in Tucson, and then I moved here and was doing stand-up, but I worked at K-Rock, and then I got fired. And you've worked in radio. It's like when you get fired from a station, you kind of have this thing of like, well, fuck doing this job.
Right.
These people are all worms. I hate it. It changes so fast. So I was like, this sucks. And then the fact that we're doing the Bonfire on Sirius XM was kind of a thing of like, man, this is the exact thing I would get fired for at every other job, which is sitting around with my friends talking about some crazy shit we saw.
Yeah, it's nice. You know, I went and did the show yesterday, as my New York travels. And, you know, my vibe on that is you do a lot of podcasts. I do a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
And
a lot of podcasts are like, you know, oh, yeah, are you allergic? Because my cat sometimes will jump in your lap, you know, yeah. And my mom's making top ramen. Yeah. If you want some, tell her now. Like, there's a lot of weird going to people's houses and walking through porches and, yeah. and stuff. It feels a little unprofessional. And then there's terrestrial radio, which is like, it's what I'm used to, but it's also like, involves the man.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of like a clock and breaks and hard outs and news and traffic and top of the hour and all that station checks and you got to get the thing out. And so going and doing your show had this kind of salty sweet mix to it, which is like there's an air of professionalism here.
Yeah.
Not the host.
Yeah, I was gonna say
the environment is definitely professional. Yeah. The equipment is top notch. No, it like was a nice vibe between long form, say what you want, but there is a format, there's a break,
yeah.
there's a window, there's a control room, there's an engineer, like people have headphones on.
I think it's the equivalent of when you could go drink at a friend's house in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, oh, your mom's home. She yeah. knows we're drinking.
Right.
We shouldn't be doing this. But there's still, you know, there's like some rules.
Right.
But you're breaking, you know, you're doing the stuff that you can't do everywhere.
You're not at the park.
Yeah, you're not at the park. Exactly.
Yeah.
You're not going to a park for a podcast. You're like in someone's house. You're like, this is all right. Not bad. Because we're always waiting to get fired. And now we've been there for 7 years. And you're like, all right, well,
yeah, it's nice. It's nice that there's so many outlets for so many voices, and then there's always that thing where it's like, you know, there was one hard seltzer White Claw like 4 years ago, and you go, okay, and now there's 7,000 yeah. hard seltzers, and then you go, how do you make room on the shelf? Like, how do you even get into the market? Like, how do you get into the zeitgeist? Like, how do people even find your hard seltzer with all the other hard seltzers out there?
That's the hard part, you know, because Joe and I both doing stand-up, we've seen people that, I'm not going to say who the person is, but there's a person who's like a millionaire, and she was never good at stand-up. And Joe just had the funniest line one time where he went, I legitimately thought she was out of the business for 4 years. And then she just came back and was like, now she gives our friends jobs and shit. And we're like, this is pretty crazy because you see, when you're doing stand-up, you have to be good at stand-up. So when there were gatekeepers, sometimes they got it right. And you're like,
right.
oh, yeah, Rory Scovel rules. He right. should be doing this stuff. But now that there's no gates, you see people with massive podcasts starting to do stand-up. And you're like, you're doing stand-up to grab that road money. Because
right.
they're selling out comedy clubs. So you're going to clubs, you know, doing half full rooms for years. And then you see someone that's like, yeah, we do a biscuit podcast. And now, right. you know, we sell out every night at Helium.
It's like, no, it's Paul true. Used to always say, I'd have a bet of luck throwing my puppy in a fire and putting it on YouTube.
yeah. But it really is. It's like you get, as a comic, you get fucking mad about it. Because you're like, what?
Yeah. No, that's what happened to me. Like, I wasn't a stand-up. I did stand up a little bit early, and then I got right into sketch improv, and that was my world for a long time. And then I got into radio, and then that was my world. And then at the beginning days of podcasting, there was no advertising model. There was no revenue stream or model. There was no model. The model was you could use your show to advertise you going out and doing live dates, but I didn't have the ability to do live dates because I wasn't a stand-up. So then you have to sort of put together this kind of an evening with kind of thing. And I'd done so many colleges with Dr. Drew in the late 90s, and we played. I was so spoiled. Like, I did open mics with like four people in the audience, and then I'd get bumped by Pauly Shore, who'd just show up there with like a notebook and read out of it for 40 minutes, you know. And like, that was my opening. I went right from that to 8,000 seat basketball arenas in huge colleges that would be sold out in huge 3,000 seat auditoriums because the guys from MTV's Loveline were coming to your college campus and they just give all the tickets away.
Yeah.
And I went from performing in front of four people to performing in front of 4,000 people, but I got used to it. And then it came time to go out and try to make money doing
a podcast, but you couldn't make money doing a podcast through selling advertisements. You had to sell tickets.
Yeah.
And then it came time to get an act together. That was weird.
Was there a point where you're like, I don't want to do this? Like, can I just podcast and not go live? Because, I mean, I get a live podcast. Live podcasts are very popular now. But there's people that are doing, like, five headlining shows in a weekend when you're like, you've been doing stand-up for less than 2 years.
I did stand-up. I don't know when my first live podcast was, but I may have been on the vanguard of that. Because yeah. I did shows at the Irvine Improv live, like a live podcast show in 2009.
You did Caroline's.
Like at the end, and Caroline's.
Because
right.
I remember sneaking in, because when Joe and I, we were both drinking buddies.
Ah.
We were, you know, we knew the
did
people.
I go to that?
No, I think.
I was like, fuck, that one's gone.
I think we were drinking and I left to go by myself. It's one of those things where I was drunk enough to feel confident to walk into Caroline's and go like, I do Monday nights here. Can I sneak in the back? And they're right. Like, sure, if you want to. But live podcasts are great. And again, like if I'm on the road and I don't sell a lot of tickets, the joke is always like, well, you'll have an America's Got Talent magician, like Piff the Magic Dragon.
Right.
Will come in on Sunday or Wednesday.
He's not bad.
he'll sell out, and the waitresses can make their rent.
Right.
You know, but on the weekend, I'm trying to build an act.
I always do that joke. I'm like, I'm at the stage of my career where in between shows, the waitresses have winter coats on. They go, it was nice to meet you. Yeah, dude. I'm like, where are you going?
Yeah. And it was the ones with the waitresses apologizing for you where they go, I think you're really funny. Sorry, nobody showed up. And you're like, and you could see them taking their apron off and you're like, fuck this.
But this is an interesting thing too. Not to bring it to another topic, but back in the day, like in the old days, the club brought people in. Like
right.
Ron yeah. Bennington said that. He owned a club in the 80s, and he said, when I owned a club, if there was nobody there, the owner apologized to the comedian.
Yeah,
right.
Now the comedian apologizes to the owner. Like, there's yeah. no, there's no, what do you call it, responsibility for the club to bring people in.
Oh, yeah, man. It's interesting. It's an interesting shift because, yeah, when the club's comedy was exploding in the 80s, you would just go see a comedian. You'd
right.
go see your comedian. It was just the comedian.
Let's
that
go to
was up
the
there.
Comedy show tonight.
Yeah.
It's crazy when people still have that line of thinking.
But it's also kind of reminiscent of like when I was a kid. It's like, we're going to the movies. Like, what's playing? Air conditioning. I don't know. Juju Beast. Like, we're going to the movies is what I'm telling you. It's like, now it's really specific, like, which movie.
But some people still do that because I just did Q&A for our film, 4th of July. And this lady, I did Q&A for one screening, and it was fun, and then it went long enough that the next screening was coming in. The guy goes, why don't you introduce the next screening? And I went in and I said, hey, there was like seven people there. And I said, hey, you're about to see my movie. And then a lady was like, had a mask. And she was like, what is this movie? I had to be like, what? She's like, what's the movie? I was like,
who are you?
How did you get here?
Are you manager of theater?
So some people, I think they're Eastern European.
Yeah.
Maybe she was hiding, but some people still go to the movies just randomly.
K12.com. Want more control over your child's education? Of course you do. Check out today's sponsor, K12.com. Tuition-free online school that fits your life. Personalize your child's education to let them learn their way at their pace using tech for their generation. Learning is flexible, interactive, and fun. At K12.com/podcast, you can explore curriculum and see success stories from some of the 2 million plus families that have used K12.com. Classes are taught by passionate state-certified teachers, and your child can develop social skills with field trips, clubs, and activities. K-12 has helped families take control of their child's education for 20-plus years. You can take control, too. Take charge today at k12.com/podcast. k12.com/podcast. All right, we need to take a quick break. Back with Dan Soder and Joe List right after this.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save.
It's Geico Easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All month long, the biggest movies are streaming free on Pluto TV's Popcorn Summer Movies. Watch star-studded blockbusters like Titanic and Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Or fall in love with charming rom-coms like Hitch and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. The best part? Pluto TV is 100% free. No credit cards, not even a sign-up. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
People of Earth, it's time for another installment of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month, we got things that will take care of your body, soul, and scrotum. Like a sample pack of Tame the Beast Nut Butter, a blend with Tuck Everlasting anti-aging and anti-chafing ingredients that will keep your sack high and tight. We've also got the great Dano's Seasoning, who will make each and every kind of meat taste even better, whether it's beef, pork, or your fellow man. Dano's is low sodium and no sugar, so even Vinny will approve. We've also got Nude Mints to not only freshen your breath, but your gut biome too. These incredible products and a bottle of your choice can be found at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25. So prep your mails box. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived.
All right, we're back. The show, obviously the SiriusXM show, The Bonfire, Big J's on that show as well. Very good time. I recommend it highly, especially my episode. Monday through Thursday, 5 to 7 p.m. on Channel 103. And Joe's got a podcast, Tuesdays with Stories. And, oh, Mark Norman, our friend, is also co-host. So, you know, I mean, between the two of you, that's a lot of funny for a podcast.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we feel confident we have a very funny show.
We got about 15 minutes left. Trying to think of a good way to discuss the last 15 minutes of this show.
Getting
projects,
nervous.
Yeah.
It feels very serious. I thought you were going to ask a really serious question.
No, Roe v. Wade.
What's your take?
Stand-up specials. Do you think that's going to be sort of the wave of the future? It's like, do it for yourself, do your own, release it, and let the public vote with their clicks and their eyeballs.
It feels like it. I mean, it feels like making live performance personal appearance is the way to make cash. That's how our friends are all rich. If not Patreon, it's personal appearances, because you sell the tickets by just getting as many people to see it. It feels old school. It feels like watching like Metallica Behind the Music, of them just selling tapes out of their truck.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's weird. We were talking about doing live podcasts, and like I said, I was very early money on doing live podcasts, but I was saying it's just an old timey radio show. They'd have an audience in a theater. They'd do their mics. Yeah. They'd do the Foley sound effects of the lightning and the thunder and everything. And it was like people used to go watch a radio show being taped, essentially, or done.
I've been working on my live thunder.
You're falling with your sheet metal.
I have all the things. And get ready to see my take on The Shadow coming soon to a radio. It's crazy how it all goes in a circle. Because, like, podcasting was... Radio, they said, was dead.
Right.
Because of iTunes. And then, like, podcasting got big. And you're like, that's just radio. That's big. And now stand-up, it was like, oh, everyone would go on the road to then do a special, but now you do a special to go on the road. Now you put something out, so you're like, hey, come see me in these cities.
I'm interested in your guys' take on this phenomenon, and you're sort of old as new again. Like, so the podcasts are like long-form conversations, and they're very popular, and people love these long form conversations and podcasts. And then you go, oh, these kids with the TikTok and everything's got to be a 10-second soundbite. They have no attention span. They're all staring at their screens all the time. And it's like, so on one hand, everyone's lost their attention span. They're in a movie theater looking at their phone while the movie's going on, and they can't concentrate on anything, and they're constantly like driving and texting and multitasking and everything. On the other hand, there's long form podcasts and people are listening to it like an old timey talky radio show. So like, which is it?
Well, I think a couple things about that. One, I think podcasts, you can multitask. You can listen to it while you're walking around or at the gym and stuff. But I think about this too, because they talk about this attention span, and I do see it. I do agree. But also, everybody's into shows. They're like, have you watched all 7 seasons of Peaky Blinders?
It's crazy.
Which is not a... Like, movies are less popular, and they're 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, have you seen this TV show? It's 85 hours long.
I mean, the new season of Stranger Things, they legitimately did 3 episodes that were movie length, like 2-hour long episodes.
Yes.
And you're like, these are movies.
Right.
They're just making a season of movies. It's like if Godfather came out and they're like, it's a TV show, 3 episodes. And
right.
You're like, this is fucking crazy. I think it's also people chop stuff up. So people, like, if you're watching a TV show, now that everything's streamable, everything's on demand, you can, like, pause it and come back and be like, where was I? And you're watching.
Yeah.
You know, like, sitting through a stand-up special.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I get it. Like, you guys are younger than me, so you'll probably not vibe with this concept. But the first time the notion of TiVo was introduced, probably 2000 is when somebody told me about it, or I got one or something. They were like, you can pause live TV.
Yeah.
And I was like, get the fuck out of here, yeah. You sorcerer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
You know, and they were like, you can stop it. I was
yeah.
like, we can do freeze the actors,
yeah.
Stop the football game. What are you going to do, call timeout? So like, no, you can stop it, go in the other room, make a sandwich, come back and pick up where you left off. Live TV. I was like, it's impossible.
Yeah, and then every single person learned that they had an alcoholic cousin that thought he invented it himself, where he goes, you know, I always said you should be able to fast forward through commercials. And you're like, well, you didn't invent that.
Oh, fuck the people where their wish is somehow they've usurped that onto inventing the whatever. Like, you should be able to get from New York to L.A. in 15 minutes. And I've been saying it for a long time.
Yeah.
I didn't work on the Hyperloop.
I didn't do anything towards it.
Ron will tell you. We're in the Chevelle, right? We're coming from the lake.
That was TiVo. It's like one of your friends being like, I've always said you should be able to record TV. And you're like, well, yeah, because it's just it's a convenient thing.
Yeah, shit you wish doesn't make you Einstein.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. I remember similarly being in high school in like 1998 and our communication, whatever he was, he was the TV guy, whatever that subject was called in high school.
But, AV?
Jeez.
Back in my day, it was like they had the AV group.
AV Club.
Windbreakers, pushing around TV sets.
But I remember him talking about, and his name was Mr. Belden, not Belding, but Belden, close enough, but him saying, in the future, Blockbuster Video won't exist. And this is like, the internet was around, but it was whatever. And this is late 90s. And he was like, on your TV, every movie will exist. And you can just choose the movie. You won't have to go to a video store. And I remember thinking, fuck this guy. What the fuck? And it's the same thing. I was like, I literally legitimately was like, all the VHSs in the world are going to be, or the DVDs, whatever it was, are going to be in the TV.
Yeah.
I couldn't wrap my head around the idea that I could just pull up any movie.
You know, I wonder, so like we came from like an analog time.
Mm-hmm.
So the digital world of like everything is going to be in your phone, you know what I mean? More computing power than the Apollo 1, you know? Like it's like, so for us, we grew up like superstitious natives and we saw...
Stealing your soul.
We saw a Bic lighter for the first time, like, oh, held sticks up, you know. This guy's a sorcerer. Flame is coming out of his palm, you know, on command, you know. But I realized, like, my kids, I got 16-year-old twins, they grew up with TiVo, with the smartphone, with, you know, how about just the fucking fact that you can film anything from your phone?
Crazy.
You know what I mean? Like when I was growing up, you know, something I had to wind cameras or battery packs or whatever. The whole point is, I remember the first time we did like a man show retreat. We were shooting wraparounds for like the best of or whatever. We were at some dude ranch in Montana or something, and one of our producers, like Doug, like showed up and he's like, We're gonna party on Saturday night. I'm like, they got a boom box or wax something to place wax cylinders or xylophone or something I could play. And he's like, I got 100 songs all on my computer. And I was like, how many CDs does your computer hold? Because you have like CD.
Yeah, you needed a thing to carry the music.
You put them in the trunk of your car if you're doing good. Yeah. You know? And it was like, no, they're all in it. And I was like, no. That was like in 2001.
Yeah.
But my kids are not going to be impressed by anything because Elon Musk already took his car and put it into orbit.
Yeah.
And their phones already have 3,000 songs and all the YouPorn you need. So I'm going to be telling them about stuff that seems fantastical. And they're going to go like, what's next, old man? Like, I heard you, big whoop. Whereas we still had that sort of Neanderthalian brain where we could still have wonderment, amazement.
Yeah, shock. You could be shocked by something.
Yes,
by
yes.
technology. It's going to be funny to see your kids turn 30 and they're going to come to you and be like, Dad, they're putting stories made out of trees.
Right.
And they put them on these sheets. And you're like, that's books.
Yeah, those are books.
Like, it's crazy. They like cut up trees and make them into stories.
Yes.
And you're like, it's coming back around. One of the craziest stories of someone not adapting to the future is Rochester, New York. If you go there, there's like all these beautiful mansions. Mm-hmm. And you like drive around. There's a great comedy club there, Comedy at the Carlson. And you're like, we're going back to the hotel one night, and I was like, look at all these fucking beautiful old school mansions. And he's like, yeah, it was very – Rochester did very well when Kodak film was very big. And then a guy came to Kodak film and was like, hey, it's all going to be digital. It's all going to be digital. And Kodak film was like, no, it's not. Get the fuck out of here. And now you see Rochester's like not doing well financially because a guy was like, fuck that. That's not the future.
Yeah, there is something, though, interesting about like the analog process, and that I was interviewing Greg Gutfeld yesterday for my pod, and I noticed on his show he has a lap full of notes. Like he gets a Sharpie notes. He had it with him when I was interviewing him, and he was like, I was like, you're not typing in your phone, you're writing longhand. And I realized I do that too all the time.
So yeah.
Notes. And he said, it's not really just about capturing it. It's about facilitating it. So it's like he'll start writing, an idea, but not really have an end. But the actual writing will sort of help create the physical writing will help create the end. And I don't know if you guys are that way with jokes. Like I just have buck slips and I just write stuff down constantly.
We always carry little notebooks on us just to write the sentence because you hope that's what leads you to the next. That was kind of the thing. You go up and say that sentence and then you work it out on stage. Because you're like, because sometimes you'll write something and be like, this is funny. And then you say it for an audience and they're like, that's not funny.
Sometimes.
You're like, fuck.
I try to do this as a bit, but I feel like nobody related. Sometimes when I'm I spend so much time on my phone and the computer. I'm writing and I know I'm writing a word wrong. And there's a moment where I think it's going to correct.
Are you waiting for autocorrect?
Oh, fuck. I'm like, that didn't work.
I'll get it where I'm like, where I write a word and I'm like, how do you, like, is that a word? I'll look at it so much writing it that I'm like, my brain will fold. And I'll be like, I don't know. Is this what does this even mean? I did that with pants the other day. I was like, pants. And then I was like, I had to fucking put it away.
Well, you might just have
a brain tumor?
Degeneration.
Oh, fuck, dude. I have ALS.
The saddest part is I was a horrible student, horrible speller, horrible reader. And I was trying to write in my phone the word eulogy.
Yeah.
And it had nothing for me. Like, I was like, Y-O. And I was like, come on, spell correct. And like, we got nothing, bro.
You're not giving us a fucking clue.
We help stupid people, but not.
You have to know the ballpark of where you're going.
Like, you need three letters that are in this word.
I always loved that Patrice O'Neill joke.
I was going to bring that up too.
The restaurant, it goes, the arant. What's the arant? You can have my mother, my mom, I'm sorry.
The bananas, it goes, someone could hold a gun to my mother's head and be like, you got to spell bananas. And I'd be like, first of all, mom, Look at me. I love you.
I love you. Banana.
Banana.
I was on Celebrity Match Game, and I got banana. I misspelled bananas.
Oh my god!
On TV though, like
do you remember
prime time with Alec Baldwin?
Fuck! Do you remember?
Almost shot me. Okay.
The Dan Quayle. Oh yeah.
I was going to bring up Quayle too.
Do you remember Dan Quayle did the thing about? Was it potatoes?
I think it was tomato, or maybe it was potato.
I think it was potatoes, and then he just got fucked for like 2 years.
Yeah.
To like, you idiot, you mongoloid. And he was like, and that's a mistake now. I'm like, I would have said that.
And I think they're both in the dictionary. Like, it's one of those things where both are. Because
he said no E. That was like the thing. He goes, there's no E at the end. And then everyone was like, you fucking moron. And like 91, they're like, you fucking idiot.
It is weird how incensed people get about spelling.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that really say about a man other than he didn't pay much attention in school? Especially. And by the way, the greatest spellers in the world are people you'd never want to have a beer with.
Right.
No one ever goes, hey, we're going out for a good time. That guy's an excellent speller. It's going to be an awesome night.
You know who's a good speller? Ted Kaczynski.
That's right.
That guy's excellent at spelling.
And 11-year-old Indian kids.
Yeah, those are the two groups.
On the spectrum, by the way. Yeah. You want to hang out with them?
You're either writing a manifest or winning a gold cup in fucking a spelling bee. That's
it. Yes. I would.
I misspell shit all the time. I need my phone.
Yeah, it's
I'll go
good.
Phone to. I'll use my phone to correctly spell it and then write it down.
There's a great Dan Bulger, comic in Boston, a good buddy of ours, has a joke about spelling words wrong, and he's like, "I will defiantly be attending your mother's funeral."
Yeah. He didn't know how to spell defiantly. Yeah, I love that joke.
Yeah, I know. We should kind of, I don't know, maybe dumb people who are slightly uneducated should like tear a page from the Black Playbook with spelling, where it's like, here's, we just spell words how we want to spell them.
It's our culture.
Fuck you, and it's part of the culture.
Yeah, this is the dumb culture.
This is how we do it.
Eulogy is now, you know, Y-E-U, however the hell you wanted to spell it.
Diarrhea is one for me. I've never been able to get right. I've spelled diarrhea so poorly in my phone that same thing. It just says no replacements found. And I'm like, ah, fuck.
Do you guys ever trip up with words? Like saying words. I learned that nuclear is, that'll fucking sideline me.
The two that were tough were nuclear versus nuclear. And then there's desalinization, which is either desalination or desalinization, then you find, I'll tell you what pisses you off. When you say it one way, you go desalinization, and then your fucking Poindexter friend goes, no, it's desalination. And you go, oh, I feel stupid now because I said that on stage or whatever. And then you go look it up and it says, you can say it either way.
Right.
Then why be a dick?
Why be a dick? You can say it either way. You know what another word, pronunciation for that is? Clitoris versus clitoris.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I got in an argument with my grandmother about that once. I swear to God. She said, I heard you talking on the Loveline radio and it's clitoris. And I was like...
Gam gam, it's clitoris.
And I go, Dr. Drew says clitoris. And she said, she had a doctor friend.
Yeah.
She trumped me. She's like, well, my Dr. Samuel says it's clitoris.
Yeah.
And we went to my grandfather's dictionary, which was large print because he was blind at the end. And we looked it up and it was like, say it either way. But my feeling is like, isn't that a cop out if you make dictionaries and you're like, hey, do whatever you want. Like, no, we've turned to you for a definitive answer.
Go with the flow. Go however you feel.
Or never judge a tennis game because you go, is that ball in, maybe? Is it out? Wherever you want.
What's the score?
However you do it.
I had a bit about that with tinnitus. When your ears are ringing.
Tinnitus.
Which people think it's tinnitus, but there's actually an explanation that it is tinnitus. Because tinnitus, like tendonitis, is like inflammation. There's no inflammation. And it's spelt different. It is tinnitus. And the joke was the doctor on a YouTube video was like, it's tinnitus. And then every comment was like, fuck your mother. You fucking and I was like, well, this guy's a doctor, but these people seem pretty adamant.
They're
so I don't know
fired
who to,
up about it.
I mean, like every comment is like, this guy's a fucking piece of shit.
They started, what's weird now is they're doing it with countries, like Qatar is now Qatar.
Yeah.
Some people call it Qatar, some people call it Qatar, and you're like, when did you guys, this is a recent thing.
They did it with
Kiev and Keys.
Yes, that
these are all just college assholes trying to change it up. The second you start saying the Cannes Film Festival, switch it back to fucking Cannes just so they can lord that shit and their degree over your head. Fuck those people.
My mom, I caught my mom doing that one time when I was a kid where I was like, that's not how you say it, where she would call Nicolas Cage Nicolas Cage. And I was like, no one's doing that. But she was so, like, this was before the internet or whatever. She's like, no, 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 you can do both. You can call them either way.
It's the kind of college elite version of the celebrity blowhard version where, like, yeah, Bob De Niro and I have worked together. And if you just fucking call him what we call him, would you? We get it. You guys had a fucking coffee.
Right.
In the green room. Yeah. You don't get to call him Bob.
Bobby and I really thought that this film... Blah.
But check out Lulu and I's movie.
I will Big plug Lou. That as we wrap this up.
Big Lou movie. Dude, start calling him Big Lou.
4th of July in select theaters as we speak. And also, of course, Dan's show, The Bonfire. Very fun with Big J. Okerson. I'll give you guys some plug dates. Dan is going to be Phoenix Stand Up Live. Great venue, great club. One of the cool kind of modern clubs that's also works.
Yeah,
you know, it's got a good vibe, even though it's a newer.
I'm excited. It's the first time I've worked that club. I usually do the Tempe Improv, so I'm excited to move.
It's fun. It's beautiful. August 18th through the 20th. So bring a parka. Tulsa Kane's Ballroom. That'll be August 27th. And DanSoder.com for the schedule. And Joe's doing Nashville Zanies. That's a very another cool club. August 12th and 13th, and then you just go to ComedianJoeList.com for all the schedules and all the dates. The Jordan Harbinger Show, different kind of sponsor for this episode. The Jordan Harbinger Show is a great pod if you're a fan of fascinating podcasts with interesting people you should definitely check out. There's an episode for everyone, no matter what you're into. Jordan talks to guys like Scott Adams about persuasion in a world where facts don't matter. Or you can go inside the dark world of wildlife trafficking. You always find something useful to apply to your own life, like routine changes to boost productivity or slight mindset tweaks to change how you feel about the world. We enjoy the show. You will too. Search it out. The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R. And you can get it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to finer podcasts. It is the Jordan Harbinger Show.
Hey, man, where'd the hour go? That was fun, you guys.
Oh, yeah, it was super fun.
Thanks for having us on, man.
Thanks for joining me. Until next time, this is Adam Kroll saying mahalo.
Make sure you get a copy of Adam's new book, Everything Reminds Me of Something, Advice, Answers, But No Apologies. The hard copy and audiobook are available wherever finer books are sold. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get your tickets to see the Ace Man. Get them right now at AdamCarolla.com.
You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to Geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com.
All month long, the biggest movies are streaming free on Pluto TV's Popcorn Summer Movies. Watch star-studded blockbusters like Titanic and Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Or fall in love with charming rom-coms like Hitch and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. The best part? Pluto TV is 100% free. No credit cards, not even a sign-up. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.